I'm Robin Rogers, and this is Parkinson's Recovery. My guest today is Nan from Seattle, and what I'd like to be able to do is to ask Nan to tell you, our listeners, about herself. So, Nan, thank you so much for being with us today.
Well, I'm glad to be here.
So tell us about yourself.
Well, I'm 65 years old. I was diagnosed with Parkinson's in February of 08. I've ridden on the Ragbri ride across Iowa twice with John Carlin, who'll be your other guest. Let's see, I'm a retired anthropologist from the University of Washington. I was not ever a remarkable athlete in any sense of the term until I started riding the bike with Parkinson's, and I'm much stronger now than I ever was, and really been in much better shape.
When you were first diagnosed, what were your symptoms?
Definitely had a tremor, was very weak. I have a hiking group that I go out with each week, and the women are generally older than I am, and they were beating me, you know, much stronger than I am. I'm usually a pretty good hiker, and I just couldn't keep up. I was tired. I couldn't move my neck more than a 90-degree radius. I was shuffling, I was stumbling, I was losing my balance a bit. My arm hung stiff at my side, and my hand was clenched. Those were physical characteristics. Mentally, I was having trouble keeping track of what was going on, what had happened. I got to the point where I could read. I have a PhD, and I read a lot. And I could decode words, but I couldn't remember what I read, and that was really, really frightening. I would go to a party, and I couldn't follow two conversations at once, which, you know, was very unusual for me. And so I started wanting to be isolated because it was just embarrassing. And I was really working hard at covering up these symptoms.
So you decided there must be something up, and then decided, I guess, to go to your doctor?
Well, I actually wrote in my journal in January of 08, I wish this tremor would stop. I wish this shaking would stop. It's just like I've got Parkinson's or something. And then in February, I was with my hiking group, and one of them is married to a doctor, and so I started asking her about the shaking. She says, well, actually, my husband's the doctor, not me. Why don't you go to your doctor? So I went, and my doctor said I had Parkinsonian symptoms but not Parkinson's, and set me up for an appointment with a movement disorder specialist for the next month, but I was not willing to wait, so I called a friend of mine who is a retired movement disorder specialist here in Seattle, and she came over the next day and walked in the door and followed me about 10 steps and said, you have Parkinson's. And that was that.
And then what happened after that? Did you talk with her about getting medications or not, or what was the next step?
Well, I was in emotional shock, I think, would be the next step. She stayed for about an hour and talked to me. I said, don't I get to do any parlor tricks or anything? And she said, yeah, let's do all the parlor tricks. And it was obvious to me that I failed. And then my husband came home after about an hour, so we went through all the whole story all over again. So at least I heard it twice in one day, which was pretty helpful. She suggested that I go to a certain doctor, and it was the same doctor that my original doctor had set up the appointment with. So I'm really lucky to be with one of the top doctors in Seattle. That's very, you know, very much in my favor. And it didn't hurt that the two doctors were personal friends, too, because I think I always get really nice treatment. I think he gives everybody really nice treatment, but I have that extra little edge, maybe. I went to see him the next month, and he put me on Nupro, which was great. I had this wonderful reaction to the patch, and a week later it was pulled from the market. So I was devastated. Then he put me on Mirapex, and I had really strong negative reactions to Mirapex. Was on that for several months thinking that, you know, I didn't know it was the Parkinson's or the Mirapex that I was reacting to. And then finally we switched over to ReQuip XL. And that's been really just fine for me. But we started out at 8 milligrams, and then I got into the biking program. I'm now down to 4 milligrams, and that's pretty cool that I can reduce my medications because I bike.
So you mentioned biking program. Tell everybody about that.
This is a fabulous piece of news that needs to be shared with everybody. Several years ago, Dr. Jay Alberts from the Cleveland Clinic went on RAGRI. He actually grew up in Iowa, and he became a neuroscientist. So he's not a medical doctor, but he's a neuroscientist. He was working at Emory, and are you still there?
Yeah.
Okay. He convinced some of his friends to go ride RAGRI. And one of the people was to a woman who had Parkinson's. So they decided, that couple decided they would go, but they would, in fact, ride a tandem. Unfortunately, they'd never ridden a tandem before, so they got on the bike and they fell off, and they got on the bike and they fell off, and Jay looked at them, and this is Dr. Alberts, looked at them and said, you know, this marriage is going to be in jeopardy after a week of riding this tandem. He said, I ride a tandem, so I'll ride the front, and Kathy can ride behind. So about halfway through the trip, Kathy said, something is really changing with my symptoms. And by the her handwriting was back to normal, which was really weird. So Jay took those 2 points and went back and set up a research study, realized that she'd been riding at 80 to 90 RPM for, you know, day after day, hour after hour. And he set up a research study where he had 12 patients. 6 of them were riding at 80 to 90 RPM on a tandem, so it was forced pace cycling because they couldn't do it on their own. And the others were riding at their normal pace, which was about 50, 55 RPM. Everybody was kept within the same heart rate parameters. And at the end of 8 weeks, the people in the test group had a 35% average of 35% reduction in their symptoms. Wow. Just by biking. That was the only variable, was this cadence and staying within 60 to 80% of one's maximum heart rate. So that was pretty cool. He published a paper in Neuroscience in January of 2009. He was interviewed on national TV during the Republican convention of 2008, and one of our friends saw that interview and forwarded it, you know, the clip to us. I contacted Jay and said, you know, I'd like to do this. I didn't have a tandem or any, you know, there was no program here or anything like that, but at least I had the parameters, the protocols of what I was supposed to do. So I got on my bike and started to ride. Well, then Dr. Alberts asked my husband and I if we'd like to ride RAGRI across Iowa. And I said, oh, of course, that would be just great. Then I started thinking about it and thought, you know, I'm 62 years old. I've never ridden a bike more than 30 or 40 miles in a day, and certainly not in consecutive days. What was I thinking about? I must be out of my mind. So I said, well, I've got to practice then. So I got on my road bike and I started riding from anywhere from an hour and a half to 4 hours, 4 to 6 days a week, keeping up that high cadence and keeping within my heart rate zone, but obviously extending the time a lot longer than he had done in the study. Amazingly enough, about 3.5 weeks later, I was walking along with my dogs. I looked down and my arm was swinging and my hand was unclenched. I turned to look over at the house across the street, and I could rotate my neck more than 180 degrees, just like a normal human being. I was standing up straight. There was no more shuffling. I mean, my symptoms were gone for all practical purposes. A couple weeks later, I went to see my doctor, and he said to me, if I didn't know you had Parkinson's, I wouldn't know you had Parkinson's.
Oh, what a wonderful thing to hear.
And this is just from biking. I just, you know, when this happened, when I was walking the dogs, and I realized what had changed, that I'd had this, it was like a light switch off and on. I just stood there on the sidewalk and cried and thought, my word, you know, this is something, this is a story to tell. This is very important. So, you know, rode RAGRI and was successful with that, rode it again this year, was successful with that, and now we're working to help other programs start up in the area. So one of the hospitals has contacted me, and they finished the first pilot program of 4 patients, and now the second pilot program of 4 patients is going through their program. The first group is now off on solo bikes, you know, getting better. It's not a cure, but it certainly mitigates the symptoms of Parkinson's for those of us who've tried it.
Have you then become a consultant to the hospitals and helping them set up these programs?
Yeah.
How absolutely wonderful.
Well, one hospital contacted me. The first hospital contacted me and said, you know, we've heard about you. Would you help us set up a program? So I've had just an amazing response, Robert. I contacted some friends first of all, and said, you know, how do you think I should go about getting money for building tandems? Because they're not cheap. And within minutes, I had almost $10,000 raised. These people just sent back and said, where should we write the checks? And these were just friends. I wasn't asking for money. I was asking for advice on how to raise money. Contacted people in the biking community, and it's just amazing. It's wonderful. It's heartwarming, the response of these people who want to be captains on the bikes, be ride the front end of the bike and have the patients be the stokers on the back end. It's like, we, you know, we're athletes. We can do something to help these people with Parkinson's. You've got to be kidding. And we can do it and help ourselves too. The response of the captains has been almost as heartwarming as the response of the patients. They've just bonded beautifully. Often the captains are young people, really strong riders, and the Parkinson's patients are a little older. So there's this whole cross-generational thing that's going on. It's really quite beautiful to see.
It is indeed. When you described the reality that you did not have symptoms, was that a startling reality, or is the truth that as you were biking every day for 1.5 to 4 hours, 4 days a week, that gradually the symptoms were improving, and then all of a sudden you just realized, oh, I don't have any symptoms? Or was it the case that all of a sudden the symptoms vanished in a flash?
That's a great question, and I've gone back through my journal to see if I could get an answer to that, and it seems to me that it was more like an off and on switch, and yet that seems impossible, that it must have been a gradual recovery, that I just, you know, looked down and saw my arm swinging and realized that I could do these things. I mean, I couldn't put on a seatbelt. To turn my body to reach over and grab the seatbelt from the driver's position was so painful. And, you know, now I don't even think about it. It's just, everything just changed quite quickly. Of course, 3.5 weeks is not a long time to be working on something either.
Well, but there was 1.5 to 4 hours, 4 times a week, so you really did have a strong commitment to actually do the biking.
I was terrified I couldn't get across Iowa, and I was going to embarrass myself and everybody else. It's going to end up in the wagon, you know.
The rag ride is all the way across Iowa, right? I mean, it's a
450 miles.
It's a big commitment to do that race. And how many days does it take?
It takes a week. The first one was 450 miles with a 22,500 foot elevation gain. And I think they lied a little bit about the mileage on the second year, and it was a lot longer than what they said it was.
Oh, no. You mean they did a different route the second year?
Every year they do a different route. Yeah, it's a big deal in Iowa to be part of the Rag Bright route. I mean, it's a wonderful fundraiser for the towns. You've got, you know, thousands of riders coming through who are hungry and need water and coffee or whatever, so everybody is selling something for you. It's just a great event. A wonderful thing.
It sounds totally fun to participate in that.
But the idea of, you know, getting on a bike and riding so far, and thinking, you know, here I am 62, I've got Parkinson's, and I'm going to ride across Iowa, you've got to be kidding. So that sort of fear of not being successful motivated me to ride really hard, and I had no trouble at all getting across Iowa both times.
We'll be right back with Nan after this short station break. You are listening to the Parkinson's Recovery Radio Network, which airs our weekly show now on Wednesdays in the afternoon at 3 p.m. until 4 p.m. Pacific Time, and that is for Eastern Time, 6 p.m. until 7:30 p.m. Connect anytime, any week during those hours, and you will hear the most remarkable stories about what people are doing to get relief from the symptoms of Parkinson's disease. If you have not already signed up to receive your free newsletter from Parkinson's Recovery, be sure to do so, because next week I'm releasing the November issue of the Parkinson's Recovery magazine. The lead article in the magazine is an article written by professional dancer Pamela Quinn. Many of you might have remembered that Pamela was a guest on my show last month with remarkable stories about what she's doing and the work that she does in New York City. Pamela talks about the World Parkinson's Congress that was held just last month and has some revolutionary ideas for you to consider. So be sure to sign up for the free newsletter, and to do that, you simply go to the main website. That's www.parkinsonsrecovery.com. You'll see a place there to place your email address, and that will ensure that you'll get your copy of the November issue of the Parkinson's Recovery magazine. You can call in and ask Nan any question you'd like and talk with her during the show. So you're listening to a pre-recorded discussion, but she's also here online and live. And to be able to call in and talk with her, that number is toll-free, 877-590-0733. In the symptoms, Nan, that you described that emerged back in 08 and before then, you described some issues and challenges with mental clarity which were particularly perplexing and upsetting given that you're an academic and had experience as an anthropologist at the University of Washington. Tell us about how that shifted as a result of your biking experiences.
Well, I think that the most clear story is when I went to a party a couple years ago, and was trying to talk with various friends about issues or whatever, and I could not follow the conversations. It was a bunch of babble to me. And then I went to the same party this past fall and was talking with our hostess, who happens to be a Stanford economist. And we spent an hour talking about economies of the world and various issues and political and, you know, interrelated educational issues, the whole thing. And at the end of it, I said, you know, Evelyn, I don't think you would probably remember me at this party a couple years ago, but, you know, this fact that I could have this conversation with you now is just absolutely startling and wonderful. So we hugged.
What a wonderful revelation. Many people may be thinking, well, I'm currently experiencing the Parkinson's. I've never ridden a bike more than 30 miles in any one day or week. I certainly wouldn't be able to participate in Rag Bride, which is the race across Iowa, because I'm not Iowan. Do you have to be Iowan to participate in the race?
No, it's not a race. It's a ride.
I should say ride.
Yeah, because, God help us, we weren't racing. And you don't need to be Iowan. There are people from all over the world actually come for this particular ride. And you don't even have to have that kind of goal as a ride. It's setting your own personal goals and meeting your own personal goals is what's important. We're here in Seattle now. John Carlin is here from Denver, and Dr. Alberts is coming in a couple of hours with his family for a HOPE conference, a Parkinson's HOPE conference. And we gathered together because Jay is a keynote speaker for this conference, but we gathered together to try to figure out, okay, how can we make this program accessible to the average person with Parkinson's? You know, not everybody's going to get on the bike, like you say, or have access to the bike, either a stationary bike or a road bike on a trainer or a road bike just on the road, or certainly not to a tandem. So how can we set this program up so that people can learn how to ride a bike properly? They can develop the stamina, they can develop the ability to hold the cadence between 80 and 90 RPM, which sounds terrible, but you lower the resistance and it's not that hard to twirl your legs around. But how can we make this really accessible to patients? And we realize that starting with a tandem program is important for 8 to 10 weeks, but then how to move them into a sustainable lifestyle. This is a whole change in lifestyle. I mean, I'll be pedaling my bike, you know, if I turn 90 years old, I'll probably still be sitting on a stationary bike, because if I stop pedaling, the symptoms will come back. There's no question about that. So it's a whole lifestyle commitment. And so John and myself, my husband, Jay, we're all sitting here trying to figure out how to make this sustainable. So working through YMCAs or health clubs or, you know, other organizations who can provide stationary bikes to help the Parkinson's patient. And we're getting there. We don't have a full package yet, but I think by the end of this weekend we'll be in better shape than we are right now.
How exciting. for listeners, you can hear a full interview with Dr. Jay Alberts. I aired a radio show with him a year ago where he talked about his research and the current state of what he had actually discovered. And so be sure to listen to that to get even more enthusiastic about the potential for what biking can do for you. Seattle can get a bit dreary, particularly in the wintertime. It sounds like when you say biking, then, you don't necessarily mean that you go outside and get on a bike and travel down roadways. It sounds like that might be part of it, but also it's using a stationary bike. Do I understand that correctly?
You've got that right, Robert. I have my road bike, which is a good road bike, and I like to be outside as much as possible. But you're right about Seattle, although today's sunny, tomorrow is going to rain again. I have a bike trainer, which is a Cyclops magnetic trainer that I got off of Craigslist. And I just put the rear wheel of my bike on that trainer and the front wheel on a brace, and I can sit there with my little iPod playing music or do whatever I want, watch TV or whatever, and pedal away. Just I sit down in the basement and just pedal away. And we're talking about actually getting a stationary bike from one that's being donated and putting it down there too, so people who are newly diagnosed with Parkinson's can come and cycle with me, and I can be on my bike and the trainer, and the other person can be on the stationary bike, and I can teach them how to bike and encourage them and get them past that first step of knowing how to ride a bike.
How does a person know that they're biking at the 80 RPM that you mentioned Jay has discovered is the speed which seems to be most useful for people with the symptoms of Parkinson's?
There are little gadgets called cadence meters that you put on your bike. And it has a little readout, so I'm riding along and I wear a heart rate monitor around my chest, and it shows me what my heart rate is on one side of the little cadence thing, and the other side it shows how quickly I'm pedaling.
You described an idea or a concept or a plan that you're going to be fleshing out this weekend with Dr. Alberts and John Carlin about exactly how this ought to work out. And in the sketch of that, you mentioned the first 8 to 10 weeks should be a tandem bike. That means a tandem is a bike where one person is in the front and a second person is in the back. And you described the front person is described as the captain or the person who is athletically able. The person on the back is a person who currently experiences the symptoms of Parkinson's. Do I understand that correctly?
You've got it right. The back person is called the stoker. So you've got the captain and the stoker. And the front person is a stronger cyclist and can maintain that 80 to 90 RPM cadence. The other plan that's in the works, though, is this idea of having an extra bike in my basement and not working as a tandem, just working side by side and having me coach the person as we go. So that's a, sort of another option, another kind of plan that we're going to try.
So that might be basically you would be a physical trainer of sorts and help people work through, especially individuals who are thinking, I could never do this because I'm in a situation where my symptoms are so advanced I can't even get started. So what you're saying is, wait a minute, of course you can, and I'll be able to help you figure out what you need to do in order to get on the road to recovery.
The one phrase you used that I would disagree with, Robert, is the, of course you can, because not everybody can. If people have cardio problems, then, you know, I would not want them down my basement having a heart attack. so there are certain limitations that people should take into account. If they're really, really advanced in their Parkinson's, say they're in a wheelchair the whole time, or, you know, stage four, I think that that would be a little unrealistic that they could do that. Certainly for anybody who's newly diagnosed, level one, level two, probably even level three. We've got one level three woman in the second phase of the pilot program. She's had DBS surgery four different times because she had a broken electrode, an infection, whatever. And she had never been on a bike before in her life. She's from India, had never been in pants before in her life. And this woman, I cycled with her yesterday, and she was wheeling around at 80 to 90 RPM for a full hour, breaking a sweat, doing just great. And I thought, wow, that's amazing. And she's the most disabled person that I've worked with so far. And if Shelley can do it, you know, anybody ought to, you know, you think anybody ought to be able to do it. But, you know, there are some limitations.
In terms of expectations, you mentioned that you really were working for a while, 3 or 4 weeks, with biking before you really noticed and was aware of the significant improvement. When you were working with this particular individual and she worked up that incredible sweat after an hour, did she notice or acknowledge, or did you notice or acknowledge an improvement in her symptoms even after just an hour?
Well, the group that's in the tandem program was going 3 times a week with a 10-minute warm-up, 40-minute at the cadence, and 10-minute cool-down. So they were doing much less than I was doing when I was preparing for Ragbri that first time around. She has lost a lot of weight. She's stabilized. Her cycling is smooth and continuous. Her mental outlook, all of them, their mental outlook is just way different than when they started. It's just an amazing transformation in their mental attitude. With the 4 patients who've been through the whole program, they're walking better. Their physical affect is definitely improved. I can see that just because I was the one who chose them the first time around. I interviewed them and saw them. One was very, very depressed, and now she's just ecstatic. She's just, it was just a total life-changing thing for all of them, actually.
When you consult with the hospitals who are setting up these programs, how exactly is the program set up? That is, what equipment are hospitals getting in order to make this happen?
They, if they're doing a tandem program, they obviously need tandems, and that's anywhere from buying them to having them donated or buying them used. So they need that. They need to have the cadence monitors on the bikes. Each patient needs to have a heart rate monitor. They need to have a mat that goes underneath the bike because people sweat and drip. They need water cages and water bottles because you should be drinking quite a bit while you're doing this cycling. They need John is sitting over here saying shorts. Yeah, they need biking pants that are padded because a lot of people have not been sitting on a bike for a long time, and one of the bikes is named Happy Butt. That's Shelley's bike because, she's never been on a bike before. It was pretty tough for her. They don't need special biking shoes. Just tennis shoes are fine because we just use, straps for, we don't have clip-in pedals. We just have cages on the pedals. That's pretty much the equipment that they need. Yeah, that'll do it. They need to have a space to do it in. It's helpful to have music, but not spin club music. You don't want it so loud that people can't talk to each other. You need to be able to talk to each other. You need to have some sort of a person who knows something about first aid, or if somebody has an event, you want to have somebody there who can respond to that event. It's not too tough, really. You need to keep the people at the right cadence, and you need to make sure that their heart rate is within the right zone. And since they have a heart rate monitor on, they can look at their own wrist and see, how that's going.
The hospitals then have actually designated a special room where this equipment is located and special times where people can actually do the exercising with the bikes. Is that right?
They have to have a special room because the bikes are a pretty good size, and so they're not easily trucked around for storage. They also need to have, they need to have a bike trainer, the thing that their rear wheel sticks on, and they need to have the brace at the front so the bike doesn't fall over.
And then I assume that the hospitals have some charge per hour or per session for people who are doing the bicycle exercising?
We've been really fortunate on that so far, Robert. The first hospital decided they would charge them $5 an hour for their classes, so they would have to pay, I think it was $140 or $120 up front for the 8-week classes. And then they said, well, this is a pilot, so we shouldn't be charging you because we're learning from you. So they gave them their money back. That was pretty darn nice. Then the second phase of the program has the first 4 people at the local YMCA. and the YMCA has given them free passes for using their cycles. So they're not paying anything. They don't have to belong to the YMCA or anything. They're just saying this is a wonderful community service that we can provide. Isn't that fabulous?
It really is incredible.
So the patients, you know, they're not having to pay for it, and so far. And it may be that they will have to pay for it. Even with the bikes, the response to this program has been great. I contacted the shop that made my bike and talked to the owner, and he made tandem bikes for us at cost. And these bikes are like $5,000 a piece if you buy them. And then they were $2,100 a piece, hand custom made just for us.
Wow. So
yeah.
Other bikes can cost as much as $5,000.
They can cost as much as $50,000 if you really want to get into it, but we're not Lance Armstrong here. So, you know, you can get them off of Craigslist. I actually had somebody send me an email saying he wanted to donate a tandem.
Wow.
People are fabulous. I mean,
yeah.
Just the biking world is so excited to be able to help with this program. It's like, wow. And almost everybody knows somebody who's got Parkinson's, so... Even I was in a locker room yesterday, and I was talking from inside the changing room to the woman who was standing outside, and somebody else was overhearing and sort of butted in on the conversation. By the time we finished, she had the pedalingforparkinsons.org website, and her friend was going to contact me. And you know, I was just, she said, this is fabulous. This is absolutely amazing. And that happens to me all the time. Not in locker rooms, but wherever I go.
Now, the website that you just mentioned, is that yours or Jay's, or whose website is that, Pedaling for Parkinson's?
That's Jay's website. It's Pedaling for Parkinson's with no apostrophe.
So would you like to spell that for people slowly, because I know many people will want to visit that right now.
Sure. PedalingForParkinsons.org.
We'll be right back.
Pedaling for Parkinson's is all one word.
All one word. We'll be right back with Nan after this short station break. I have been doing this radio show now since April of 2009. I'm Robert Rogers, and you're connected to Parkinson's Recovery. I just noticed that a listing on iTunes of all of the shows shows that we've now got 85 previous shows that have been aired. You can listen to any of the previously aired shows in two ways. First, you can visit the Parkinson's Recovery Radio Network page. You get there in an easy way. All you have to do is go to the main website, which is parkinsonsrecovery.com. If you forget that, all you have to remember happens to be two words. The first word is Parkinson's, and the second word is recovery. Place those two words in any search engine, and when you see the listing of results, the top result will be parkinsonsrecovery.com. That is my website. Go there, and you'll see at the bottom there's a link to something called Blog Talk Radio. Simply click on that, and that will take you to the radio program page. You'll see a rich description of the various shows, and you can download any of the previously aired shows from that radio program page. Be sure to scroll to the very bottom, because you'll see a little word that says previous. That basically means click on that, and you'll get the previous month's shows. As you can well imagine, you have to keep clicking previous, because I've been doing the show for so long, there are a number of shows that are listed on the radio show page. You can get a more succinct listing of all of the shows if you actually go to iTunes, iTunes.com. When you go to the main iTunes website, simply in that search field, type in the same two words, the word Parkinson's and the word recovery, and you'll see there that what comes up is Parkinson's Recovery Radio Show. Click on that, and you'll see the full listing of all 85 shows. You can download any of those shows for free. My idea is you can simply download the program and begin your tandem bike or forced exercise bike experience listening to any of the radio shows, so that you can basically do two things at the same time. some people have told me that it's been difficult for them to listen to some of the shows when they go to the Blog Talk Radio show page, but they're not having difficulty when they go to iTunes. So if you happen to be a person who's been challenged with being able to listen to the previous programs when you download them from the radio show page, try iTunes and see if you can't download them there and get a clearer recording of the interviews, not only my voice, but the voice of the person that I'm actually interviewing. Next week, the show is going to be with John Carlin. I actually had John on a show about a year ago. A year ago, he was doing incredibly well and talked about the many different types of things that he was doing with regard to therapies and approaches that were helping him feel better. John gives us an update on how he is doing today, and I can give you a little hint about that. He just returned from a two-week vacation to Italy where he had an absolutely marvelous time. So John gives us the scoop, the detail, and everything that he's been doing here in the last year that's making a huge difference in his own life. 2 weeks from today, on the 24th of November at 3 o'clock in the afternoon Pacific time, I will be airing an interview with pharmacist and nutritional counselor Randy Mincer. I just finished recording that interview with Randy today, and I'm here to tell you that it is a remarkable story of what happened to him personally and the challenges that he has personally confronted, and he has some remarkable suggestions for anyone that happens to be confronting currently neurological symptoms that are like the symptoms that are associated with a diagnosis of Parkinson's disease. If you'd like to be able to talk or with Nan or ask her questions, now is a good time to be able to do that. You can call toll-free the following number, 877-590-0733. I'll connect you in, and you'll be able to ask her whatever you'd like to ask her. Now we return to the previously recorded third segment of my interview with Nan. Nan, you have been an anthropologist at the University of Washington, so your career so far has involved extensive research that is anthropologically oriented. It feels a bit like I'm wondering whether or not the work that you're currently entering into, the work of helping people in hospitals and nursing homes and other kind of exercise organizations, figure out how to set up these kinds of systems for individuals who have the symptoms of Parkinson's, is related somehow to the work that you've done before, the anthropological research you've done before. Is there a connection between the two?
Well, I'd have to take you back a step further, I think, Robert. Before I was an anthropologist, I did a lot of work with nonprofits. I actually worked for the YMCA and was one of the founders of the YMCA Earth Service Corps. So that involved setting up nonprofit. Before that, I worked with the court system and helped establish the National Court-Appointed Special Advocates Association. So I served on the national board for that program as well and helped establish programs around the country and in different countries. So working with those two organizations helped me understand a great deal about establishing nonprofits and spreading the word, starting as something small in one place and moving it on to a grander scale. So doing a pilot program, working out the bugs, and then taking it to a larger program. As an anthropologist at the University of Washington, I worked with Native American tribes on science education with Native Americans. So I was working to develop programs that could help prepare Native American students, high school students, to be ready in math and science to be able to go on to college and be successful and be able to stay at college. So again, it was the same sort of idea of starting up a pilot, working with specific tribes, trying to figure out what worked and what didn't work, and then moving it on to a larger format, a larger, many more tribes involved, for example. So all of the kind of things that I'd done had been associated with starting a pilot and then expanding the pilot to a larger population. So when I retired from the university in 2003, it was sort of like, okay, now I'm going to go fly fishing and tie flies and make quilts, things that I like to do.
Yeah.
And then Parkinson's came along and said, whoops, your skills are needed in this venue, so you better drag out your skills again. And it's starting up these programs for peddling for Parkinson's is, you know, just sort of another iteration of the things that I've done for years and years. This is pretty familiar territory for me. I've never worked with hospitals before, but it's not unlike working with Indian tribes or court systems or whatever. Everybody has their own culture. You have to respect the cultures that you're working with, and you have to realize that you have a common goal. Focus on the people with Parkinson's. That's the bottom line. Make sure you're not emphasizing, you know, the hospital over the people with Parkinson's or the peddling for Parkinson's over the people. You know, people with Parkinson's are at the center of this whole issue. And as long as every decision you make focuses on what's in the best interest of the people with Parkinson's, you're going to be home free. If you start focusing on something else, then you're going to get lost.
Part of your
does
work.
Does that make sense?
It does indeed. And part of your work as an anthropologist was clearly to help those students stay at being in school and being at college. And it sounds like it's the same case with the work that you're doing now. It's partly a question of getting people jump-started to actually doing the exercising. But then the other question is, how do you encourage people to stay with it?
Well, what's the alternative? I mean, when I interview people for a program, or, you know, for this particular program, I say, what do you want 5, 10, 15 years from now in your life, or what do you don't want? And I remember one woman saying, what I'm most terrified of is being in a nursing home. And other people saying, I really want to be able to play with my grandkids who aren't even born yet. And you know, you have a whole variety of answers of what people want or don't want. Some people will say, I don't have time. I say, you know, how much more time are you going to have when you're in a wheelchair? So, what's the alternative? I mean, what's the downside as a starter? You're going to get more fit. You're going to be more healthy. Even if your symptoms don't substantially diminish, you're going to have a much better mental outlook, and certainly, you know, you're going to be in better shape. I had one woman who just had terrible thing. Parkinson's was just one minor thing in her life, as a matter of fact, and she was maybe 50 pounds overweight. She just didn't have time. And I said, do you have a stationary bike? Yes, she did. I said, do you watch the news? Yes, I do. Can you sit on your stationary bike and watch the news? Yes, I can. And she started to feel like she had some control over her life. I think that's the huge issue with all of us, is that you get this diagnosis of Parkinson's, and all of a sudden you feel like you're sliding down a slippery slope. You've got no control. This is inexorable. It's just going to happen. And all of a sudden you see this peddling for Parkinson's, and it's like somebody gave you an ice axe, and you can whack it into that ice wall and stop sliding down the slippery slope. That's pretty good motivation, the sense of being able to have control over your life again. I think one of the other things, Robert, that is a real motivating factor for me is when I was diagnosed with Parkinson's, it was like my husband was transformed from being my spouse to being my caregiver. And, you know, that just does not appeal to me at all. I want a spouse. I don't want a caregiver. He's helpful on every step of the way. He's a wonderful support system. But I don't really like to think of him as a caregiver. I want my spouse as long as possible.
It sounds like you've gotten your spouse back, too.
Oh, my spouse has never left. He was great. He said right off the bat, I said, you know, when it comes time to, you know, put me in a nursing home or whatever, this is the day after I was diagnosed, he said, I said, just, you know, don't hesitate because you've got a life to live, too. And he looked at me with a completely straight face and said, yeah, I've already thought about that. I've decided to advertise for another partner on Craigslist. You know, I was like, okay, we've defined our relationship in a different way, you know. There's no question of abandonment. No question whatsoever. Now he's just absolutely fabulous.
Well, pretty clear. He's also saying today, I'm your husband, not your caregiver.
So, well, you know, we just returned from 5.5 weeks of a fly fishing trip out west here. And, you know, I climb over the rocks with sure-footedness and catch fish. And, And he supports me if I need it. If I'm stuck in the middle of the river, he'll come out and fetch me. But other than that, you know, he just presumes that I can do things unless I call for help.
You've been participating in Rag Pride, the race, or I shouldn't say race, but the ride across Iowa now for two straight years. Will you be doing it this next year?
No, I will not. I've been asked, John and I have both been asked to climb Mount Kilimanjaro at the same time next year. From July 10th to the 24th, we're going to be part of a PDMS climb, and I understand there will be a film crew going along with to make a documentary film on this particular climb. So that's what we'll be doing instead of Ragbri. Now, John tells me he'll come home and do the last half of Ragbri, and I'm thinking, man, what a hero he is. But I think I'll come home and say, man, I just climbed a mountain. I guess I don't need to ride across a state, too. But maybe I will. But I doubt it.
So we're going to get to be able to see a DVD or a documentary of you, as well as John, climbing Mount Kilimanjaro.
Well, we won't do the climb until July of 2011, so I don't think we're going to sign up for the documentary viewing just yet.
Well, not currently, but we will soon be able to actually see that. And who's doing the documentary?
I'm not really sure. They said a PBS film crew or something like that, I think. Something like that. We're a little vague on that. The doctor who's going with us and the physical therapist who's going with us, who actually asked us to go in the first place, are coming to dinner tonight. So we'll find out a lot more about the client tonight.
Is Jay Alberts going too?
No, he's going to be doing Ragbri.
Oh, right. After all, he is from Iowa, so he's got to go back home.
He's got these 50 people who are going to be signed up to ride their bikes across Iowa. In the ride across Iowa, we had 55 people in our group, and four of us had Parkinson's, so it wasn't like a whole lot of people with Parkinson's going across the state.
If people go to the website, will they be able to get information about that ride for next summer?
Well, you can go to a Ragbri website, Ragbrai, and that will send you to the main website. If you go to pedalingforparkinsons.org, you'll see our stories about the ride, John's blog, Nan's blog, other people's blogs, so you get a real sense for the ride. If you hit Nan's blog, it'll take you to my webpage and give you more information than you ever want to know about Parkinson's and starting a program and Ragbri and my dog, all kinds of stuff.
One of my hopes and wishes is that people who are hesitant to begin riding bikes will consider the possibility that they can download the radio shows and listen to them when they ride their bike.
There you go, Robert. Good idea.
We've got shows for the last couple of years, so they can download my interview with Dr. Jay Alberts from a year ago, and they can listen not only to the interview that we're doing here today, and not only listen to the interview with John Carlin, but also the interview with Jay Alberts, and they can get incredible information and ideas about what they can do for themselves to get incredible relief from the symptoms they're currently experiencing.
Can you put those shows to a beat so it's easier to pedal?
That's a great idea. I should do that. I should find somebody that can add the right beat that will make sure that they pedal to that 80 RPMs.
There you
go. And, boy, we'd have a home run there. There's no doubt about it.
No doubt about it.
Now, the important question I need to ask you, Nan, is what about people who, let's say, live in New York City or San Francisco or Chicago, and they're thinking, I'd like to call Nan. I'd like to be able to get some assistance in setting up a program in hospitals in my local city. Can people contact you who don't live in Seattle and get some advice and help?
Sure. My email address is Nan, N-A-N, dot little, L-I-T-T-L-E, at comcast.net. And people are, if you go to that pedalingforparkinsons.org webpage and hit on Nan's blog at the end of the introduction thing, it has that email address too. And people are more than welcome to contact me. There's also a section on that, on my webpage on how to start a program. So some of this information is right there on the webpage too. But I really encourage people to contact me, and they do from all over the place.
so people can first see the sketch of how you start a program, and then they're obviously going to have additional questions, so they can call you. And it could be also the case that hospitals can call you, or nursing homes, or physical therapy, or health clinics. They can call you as well.
Right. I'm giving you my email address instead of my phone number, because I'm here and there, and you know, if it's appropriate to call, then we'll call, but we'll start out with an email.
The audience of the Parkinson's Recovery Radio Show is large. Some of the people who are listening to this show today are going to be newly diagnosed, and by that I mean they might have just heard from their neurologist that they have a diagnosis of Parkinson's disease. What would you like to say to a listener who has just been diagnosed with Parkinson's disease today?
But there's hope that this is not the death sentence that it was a few years, even just a few years ago, that they start out feeling this emotional shock and feeling like they have no choices. If they're like me, they looked at videos of people with Parkinson's and sat there and cried and said, that's where I'm going to be in a few years. But that's not necessarily the case, especially for the newly diagnosed. If they are willing to get on a bike, they can slow, remediate their symptoms. Every single person I've worked with so far has had symptoms remediated through this pedaling program. That's not to say it's a guarantee, and it's not going to cure your Parkinson's, but it can give you this sense of control that is huge. It's just, you go from no light at the end of the tunnel to big broad daylight at the end of that tunnel, and you're in control, which is, to me, that's a very, very important part of my life.
It sounds like then the one guaranteed outcome is improved health on some level.
I wouldn't guarantee anything for anybody. This is way too new to make any guarantees, but the likelihood is very strong.
Certainly
for the newly diagnosed, it's it's the way to go.
Right. Is there anything else that we haven't covered, Nan, that you'd like to be sure and mention?
Just don't hesitate to contact me or contact anybody on the pedalingforparkinsons.org website. Don't be shy. We're more than happy to help. It feels like, you know, I've had all this education and all this experience in life, and it's all kind of come together for me in this Pedaling for Parkinson's program. It's like, okay, you were set up to do something terrific to help other people in this way.
And it's happening now.
It's happening, and you're helping it happen, Robert.
Yeah,
appreciate it.
It's happening now. And I will do everything I can do to make sure that the word gets out to people so that more and more people can realize there is, in fact, hope.
Great.
You had an opportunity to have some further discussions with Dr. Alberts as well as John Carlin over this past weekend. Did you have any revelations as a result of those discussions?
I think the most important thing that we realized is that this is not just an 8-week program. This is a changing your lifestyle program. If I stop biking, the symptoms will come back. If any of us stop biking, the symptoms will come back. It might take a few weeks, but we'll go downhill. And so this is a whole lifestyle change and a lifestyle commitment. Maybe by keeping these symptoms at bay, we'll sort of bide enough time so they can find some actual cures for Parkinson's. Maybe, maybe not, but at least we've extended our ability to live full lives for quite a bit longer than we would have had we just relied on medicines alone.
Have you had an opportunity to do an on and off experiment where you're actually not biking for a while and have been able to observe a degradation in symptoms, and then when you started biking, you were able to observe that those symptoms resolved?
I find that whenever I'm anxious about anything, if I just get on the bike within 5 or 10 minutes, my anxiety level goes way, way down. I'm okay again. We've been on a trip, on a fly fishing trip, and some days I'm not able to bike. I usually try to bike about 5 days a week for at least an hour if I'm on the bike trainer. So there were some times when I'd have to go 3 or 4 days without biking, and I definitely noticed that I wasn't feeling as well as I had been feeling before. And, you know, I would say, well, I'm just tired because I've been out in the river for a long time or something like that, but it's very definitely a quick change the moment that I get on the bike.
Well, wow, what a natural experiment in terms of revealing the power of what this can actually do for you. Do you have any problems motivating yourself to do this on a regular basis when you're at home?
Well, the alternative is really crummy. You know, if you don't bike, you know you're going to feel badly, and you're just going to feel sick. So the motivation is I keep fit, I'm healthy, I can do the things that I enjoy doing, I can communicate with a reasonable level of sensitivity and clarity. Without the biking, I'm just a much more diminished person. So that's a pretty good motivation right there. Sometimes if I just am feeling down or low or sad about something, I'll call my husband and he'll just say, get on your bike. You know, poor you about it. It's just get on your bike. And sure enough, I get on the bike.
That's
his
response,
right? 5 minutes later, I'm okay. You know, he's pretty pragmatic about it. He knows what the bike will do. And he'll know that sometimes it's hard for me to, even though I know that it's going to help, I just look at that bed and say, oh, man, I'd much rather curl up on the bed and just take a little nap or do something, you know, that isn't worth much. And if I get on the bike, I'm going to have energy. I'm going to feel fine. So that's what I do.
For you, does it matter a lot whether or not you bike first thing in the morning, midday, or later on in the day?
I try to bike earlier in the morning. It just sort of charges my batteries for the day. But if I can't, then I'll bike in the afternoon or not too often in the evening. But if that's the time that's available, that's the time that's available. I just try to get it in.
You mentioned there is a website where you've got some considerable detail about this particular program. Can you repeat what that website is for people again?
That's pedalingforparkinsons.org, and it's P-E-D-A-L-I-N-G for Parkinsons.org, no apostrophe S.
And if individuals are interested in pursuing this in their own local communities and talking to, for example, hospitals and setting up programs, you're more than happy to provide assistance and consultancy to help them out.
Right. One other thing I should point out is that there are no fees charged for that. This is all volunteer activity. At one point, Jay looked at me and he thanked me for all the work that I do, and I just looked at him and I said, you gave me back my life. Anything I can do is small potatoes compared to that. So all this consultancy and stuff is free. If anybody wants me to fly anywhere or something like that, then an airplane ticket would be appreciated. But and now I just really feel like I've got a responsibility to share this information and this experience and the how-tos with as many people as possible.
You've been an academic and a writer your entire life. Are you going to be writing up information for people about your experience and how to set this up if somebody's interested?
Well, actually, we'll see how it goes, but I started writing a book on it. So many, many people have said, please write a book, because so many books about Parkinson's are about change your attitude and have hope. But they're basically just saying, know that there's not really going to be a change in your positive change in your physical health. It's going to go downhill no matter what. So attitude is what you can work on and have hope that they'll find a cure. That's all well and good, but I really feel strongly that action is not only possible, but will probably make a huge difference in your life. So that's the bent that I'm taking in my writing.
And it clearly has made a huge impact on your life.
Oh, absolutely. And that of everybody that I know who's tried it. When we went to the HOPE conference here in Seattle last weekend, Jay was the keynote speaker for 700 people. And all of the people who were in the pilot program for the hospital here were in attendance at that conference. And he was saying, which was very true, that he had never seen so many Parkinson's patients pedaling so fast in one place in his life. And he went out and visited the programs while he was here, and it was just great. I mean, these people were whirling away at 80 to 90 RPM and not having any trouble doing it. And they'd all experienced really strong signs of recovery. So, you know, the proof was just sitting right there in front of them. It was pretty exciting.
people, of course, are listening to you talk now, Nan, but if they had an opportunity to actually see you, for example, with your husband, would it be evident that you have any symptoms that are associated with Parkinson's right now?
That's a pretty funny thing. If I'm anxious about something, my hand will shake a little bit. I take my medicine at night instead of in the morning, because if I take it in the morning, then by nighttime, the tremor is enough to sometimes keep me awake. So late evening, there might be more of a tremor than early in the morning, because I'm at the end of my medicine cycle. I don't think anybody would know that I have Parkinson's unless I tell them.
And I want to confirm that that is definitely the case, Nan. I had the opportunity to meet you at the HOPE conference this past weekend, and there was really no evidence whatsoever that any of the symptoms were present, certainly in any mobility of yours or in any other way. And your cognitive abilities are about as sharp as anybody I've ever encountered. So you mentioned that some challenges with that back when all of this first emerged, but that's clearly been resolved.
I'm a very fortunate person.
Yeah, it's a remarkable story. It really is. Well, we don't have anyone who has called in and at this point would like to be able to talk with you. So is there anything else that you'd like to be sure and add to the incredible story of recovery that you've already told?
Maybe just to reiterate, I can't think of anything else that I'd like to add, but how very gratifying it is that the cycling community has just jumped forward to participate in this. An article appeared in the R&E Cycle magazine or newsletter just a few weeks ago, and I almost immediately had contacts from people in the racing cycling community and just cyclists all over the place saying that they would like to be captains for the next round of programs that we start here in Seattle. So we're trying to sort out, you know, which places, where to get the bikes. Somebody's donated a tandem. Somebody else said they would make a tandem, a really master cycle frame maker. It's just almost overwhelming. Somebody else asked if we have a nonprofit number for making donations, which, of course, we do. PFP, Pedaling for Parkinson's, is a 501c3 nonprofit organization. So it's just out of this one little newsletter, all kinds of people have stepped forward to say we want to participate as soon as possible. Please let us know. So the help is out there for anybody who's considering starting a program and saying, well, where will we find the patients? I found them at support groups. And where will we find the people to ride the front of the bikes, the captains? The cycling community is very, very pleased about this program. And where will we find the money? Again, I just posted a question, and a lot of people sent in money. It was amazing. People who had friends or relatives with Parkinson's, or just people who are cyclists who think this is a cool thing to do.
Nan, thank you so much for being with us on the show today. It was an incredible story that will have an impact on thousands of people.
Well, that's wonderful to have the opportunity, Robert. I really appreciate it.
And that's what's happening on the shores of the Puget Sound, where all the women are smart, all the men are handsome, and all the children are truly loved. Know that by virtue of the fact you are listening to this program, that you are on the road to recovery. Have a marvelous week.